magic lies within the trails we ride.
You're listening to the Journey On podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick is a horseman, trainer, international clinician, and author whose mission is to help people achieve a deeper connection with their horses through his transformational training program.
Just because he knows that you know.
Welcome back to the Journey On podcast. This is Robin Schiller taking over the microphone again this week to continue my special series on the women behind the men of the Journey On podcast. This week, I talk to Lisa King, who is the wife of Patrick King. Lisa isn't really behind the man, though. She's walking alongside of him with her own training and coaching business. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Lisa King. All right, I'm here with Lisa King, who is Patrick King's now wife. And we're going to get to know Lisa through all of the questions that everyone wanted to know and some of my own. So I'll let Lisa take it away by introducing herself and telling us about all about Lisa.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Well, I am also a rider and, you know, a horse enthusiast. I started riding when I was 8 and was taking weekly dressage lessons from 8 to 18. So it was a very, focused, development, I guess, in that way. And was best friends with the stable owner's daughter. And so I got to spend a lot of time, you know, at the barn growing up. And, you know, in my teenage years, I was exercising horses and doing all that and working multiple stables during high school, and just was really, I really got into it. And it was kind of my goal right off the bat was, you know, this is what I want to do when I grow up and be an equine professional of some kind. So I graduated high school and I was on a plane the day after graduation, was headed to Arizona, going to work at another facility. And I was kind of scouting out, you know, big breeding operations or big large scale facilities, just trying to get in under professionals. And so, you know, that was kind of what I was doing then after high school, was just finding different barns, different opportunities. My parents really wanted me to go to college. I fought that pretty hard because this was my focus, but I did. I tried college for a bit and I just would end up being at the barn. So yeah, that kind of was my pursuit. And growing up, you know, I was really fortunate at the barn that I grew up riding in, because, you know, my trainer, she was so education minded and she would fly in, you know, the top dressage trainers, competitors across the country. And, you know, we were in a pretty small town. We were by no means a big facility, but she just, you know, she was really adamant that we would get, you know, the best education we could. And so I was really privileged that way to get that. And that opened a lot of doors for me, getting into some of these bigger facilities.
Where was that?
Where was it? Where did I grow up?
Where, what state? Yeah.
So I grew up in Wisconsin, and this was a little town of New Glarus, Wisconsin. So I was around the Madison area, which is the capital city. Yeah. So that was a really, you know, I was really fortunate that way to get to have all those years with that and really get to see professionals at work. And it really helped me later on. But I, you know, I had done dressage growing up, and when I graduated high school, I was kind of like, I want to see what else is out there. You know, I want to see more of the horse world. And we did do some fun things. You know, we did a lot of cross training with jumping and cross country, and we would go and work cattle and do some fun things, you know, just to dabble. But I really wanted to experience more of the horse world in a professional way. And so I kind of was, you know, I did working with some reiners and Western Pleasure and some fine harness driving and just kind of seeing, you know, what was out there, I guess. And long story short, I did end up coming back to deciding dressage was you know, something that I really, really enjoyed. And I enjoyed all my other experiences too, but, it was definitely my passion. So I got an opportunity after all this, you know, working at all these other big facilities and under these big trainers. I started working at a Lipizzan breeding facility, where it was classical dressage, and, the protege of Carl Mikolka, who was one of the chief riders at the Spanish Riding School. And so they really modeled things after all of that. And, you know, they were very accomplished in that way. And so it was my first experience into classical dressage. And I would say that I rode very more of the competitive dressage. So they're quite different.
So go ahead and tell me what the differences are, because I don't know, and I'm sure there's people out there that don't understand the nuances.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a bit of a rabbit hole conversation too, but it's a lot to do with the movement, the approach, the training style. And the thing that stuck out to me right off the bat when I started working there was my perception of how a horse should be moving, how a horse should be going in contact. The dressage that I had growing up, everything's on the bit, you know, there's a big focus there. And even in these other barns that I worked at, no matter what it was, whether it was Reining or Western Pleasure or, you know, some of these saddle seat barns, there's always a focus on a headset of some kind. You know, there's a frame that we're trying to achieve. And to me, it seemed like the horses here were going without a frame, and there was no contact, and that's not true, but that's what it seemed like to me, that there was a slack in the contact, not the contact I was used to. And therefore, what are we doing? Nothing's getting done. But I have, you know, I had the ultimate respect for the people there, and Carl Mikolka and his protege, who had been studying under him for years. She was a very accomplished herself. You know, they could produce all the airs above ground. You know, so who am I to say nothing's getting done? But it was so different. It was so, so, so different. And I felt like for the first time, I felt like a fish out of water, because there was, you know, the emphasis was on the natural movement of the horse, and then you facilitate from there. And so it was just a whole different mindset, a whole different theory, if you will. And then when you really get into those upper levels, you really see the difference in the movement, and it can be very subtle to somebody that doesn't, you know, to somebody that might be just watching dressage competitively, they might look the same, but they are quite different. And, I know Carl was a big voice about that he was very displeased with, competition dressage and what was being shown at the Olympics and what was being shown. And he was a big founder in a lot of that stuff. So, you know, but so anyway, it was very different. And I was so fortunate to have that, experience. And, you know, my goal is, you know, I'm working in these barns and trying to get under these professionals to be a professional one day myself. My ultimate dream was to, get under a dressage trainer and study for a number of years and then be able to be a trainer myself. And things were going quite well. You know, I was managing this facility. I was, they were giving me some horses to take on to ride. I was working with the driving program there, and it was really, really, really going well. And I was checking all my boxes, you know, and, while I was there, I was, dating a guy who also worked at the facility. And we were out one day, and he, and I was with him, and he got into a motorcycle accident, and he crashed into a team of horses. And I was right behind him in a vehicle right behind him when it happened. And so I was with him, and he passed, and the horses passed. It was a really, really traumatic ordeal. And I couldn't go back to work after that. I couldn't see horse. If I even saw a horse out in a pasture, you know, driving down the road, I'd full on panic attack. you know, just the flashbacks, the PTSD, it like put the brakes on of my climbing of the ladder in the horse world. And so I was in my early 20s at this time. Your early 20s, you're invincible, nothing bad happens to you. So it was a 180. It was a showstopper for me. But I was so fortunate because I was such good friends with everybody at the place that I was working. After the incident, I started to get pretty upset that, you know, the universe, let's say, had taken him away from me. And now it was taking my horses because I couldn't even look at a horse. And it was like full on flashback. And so I was mad about that. And so I started to drive out to the barn and just sit in my car for like 10 minutes and then drive away. And then I was doing this for a number of weeks. And then I got to the point where I was able to clean some paddocks outside for a couple hours and then I'd leave, basically desensitizing myself.
Right. I was going to say, it sounds like desensitizing.
Yeah. And I got to the point where I was able to lead one of the older lesson horses out of the barn and I was just shaking. I mean, my knees were shaking, my hands were shaking. I was cold sweat, like, but I did it. And I, you know, got the horse in the paddock and I got in my car and I drove home. And that was a pivotal moment. That was like my contact, you know, and I worked that all the way until I was able to get back on the carriage again and, with a team of horses. And it was a really, really exciting moment. It felt like I had conquered it. But there was still a tremendous amount of trauma and grief, but I just wanted to get the horses back, you know, and I still had a lot of healing to do and a lot of psychological stuff to work through outside of that. But I was able to get back with the horses. But even so, I wasn't able to go back to my job because the job at this facility was full on. I mean, this was a full on breeding farm, CEM quarantine facility. There was a equine reproductive facility on site. There was a lot of moving pieces, and I was still having pretty, you know, random panic attacks to the point of blacking out, and just I still mentally and emotionally wasn't able to like work. But I was able to be around horses. So that was big. So I ended up just getting a job at a very small scale local boarding facility, which was really out of my realm. You know, I've always worked at these big places and working at a tiny boarding facility was just very different for me, but it was exactly what I needed, at the time. And in that working at this facility, I met this woman who was asked if she could come shadow me and be around horses. She had to learn about horses for this program that she was in. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, that's fine. And she's following me around. And the program she had gotten herself certified through was a life coaching program. And she also wanted to use horses in her life coaching and to facilitate that. And so, you know, she's shadowing me and she's, you know, as we're doing that, she's talking to me about this stuff. And prior to this, I was not interested in therapy. I was very angry. I was mad at the world. I was mad at this accident. I was mad that my dreams, you know, had been shattered and I'd lost all this stuff. And, you know, my parents were encouraging me to go to therapists and I was just like, and I'd go, but I would have such an attitude, you know, I'd just be like, what do they know? They just read it in a book. You know, they didn't, you know, I really had a chip on my shoulder about it. So she's there and she's talking to me about this stuff. And just the way she would present certain things, mindsets, point certain things out, it made sense to me. And I was receptive to it. And it was absolutely life changing. And she taught me so much. And we ended up working together. I ended up helping her with her events. And we worked together for like 6 or 7 years. And I would do this on the side of the other things that I was doing. But and I eventually went through her program to become a life coach through her company. So that it was just learning about all that was was huge. And in this time, you know, as I'm coming back into horses, I end up going out on my own. I start learning some horsemanship stuff that's paralleling this coaching stuff. And I always thought, you know, I was always taught that never judge, you know, somebody else, another discipline or somebody that might do something different until you really understand it to make an opinion, an educated opinion. Don't, you know, don't be out there just being nasty to people because they don't do something the way you do it. And I always really took that to heart and kind of wore that as a bit of a badge of honor that I was always willing to learn, you know, different disciplines, different things, different approaches. But there was one thing that I was like, would not learn, which was horsemanship. Anybody doing natural horsemanship, I was like, they're not doing anything. So I was really like, anything but that. Well, and I think everybody can kind of maybe relate to some of this where you find that horse that she had, you know, if I had this horse that had a lot of emotions and I was just not able to get a lot of things done with her. And out of desperation, I remember looking up one small thing, you know, about standing tied or something like that, or cross ties, and took some of these natural horsemanship principles or tools and applied it, and it worked. And I was like, okay, well, but that's all I'm doing. I'm going to go back to my dressage and do my other stuff. I'm not doing anything else. Then I had another problem, and okay, I'll see what they do about this. And it fixed it. And I was like, okay, but that's all I'm doing. I'm going back to my dressage. And then enough of these started happening to where I was like, oh my gosh, this is changing my horses. Like, what is happening? And ended up completely abandoning my dressage to solely focus on just horsemanship and really applying this stuff. And I spent, gosh, a number of years in what I call my laboratory. And I was training horses at this time for people and doing that full time and doing the coaching stuff, you know, part time. And so I was applying this to all these training horses and just really invested in it. And I just, every time I tried to bring the dressage back into it, it was oil and water at the time. I knew they would blend eventually, but I wasn't at a place to figure it out. And I had such a long history of training in opposition in the approach of things that I just didn't know how to change that. But I eventually did figure it out. I eventually did figure out how to blend the horsemanship with the dressage. And now I can't tell you where one starts and the other ends. It's all just immersed together. But it was a long journey of, you know, first having to completely separate the two because it was so different from what I had grown up with and been taught in so many ways. And so that brings me to where I am now of, you know, doing horsemanship and dressage and how I met Patrick. So,
Tell us about that. Tell us the story.
So I'm, you know, in this, what felt at the time like this, you know, I'm the only person doing this. I knew of a couple other people in the country that were, but, in my area, I didn't know anybody and there wasn't many even in the country that I knew of at that time doing it. So one of my students went to a Patrick King clinic and she was mentioning it to me and telling me about him. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. You know, maybe I'll tag along. And I did. And I'm watching him in the arena and I'm just like, oh my gosh, did this guy have like a camera on me? Like he's doing everything I'm doing. It was just crazy. It was so wild. And, you know, bringing the horsemanship and the dressage together and our exercises even look similar. And I was making these exercises up as I was like hybriding these two things on my own. And I was blown away. And I was excited that I met somebody else that was doing it. And then I had another student, later that year, who was going to ride and her horse came up lame. And she asked if I wanted the spot to ride with him. And I was like, oh, perfect. You know, I have a horse that I need to get off the property and get to a clinic or get to, you know, it would be perfect, you know? And so went to his clinic with a horse and we ended up, you know, connecting and chatting and became friends and were messaging each other. And just, you know, it, and it just kind of snowballed from there, I guess. So yeah, it, of course, through the horses, but,
And you were married in
January, of this year. Yeah.
This year, 2021.
Yeah. Awesome. So we met about, I think it was 5 years ago. And we got together shortly, I don't know, maybe a year after that. You know, after we started communicating and we were friends and all that. And, so I think we've been together 4 years now. But yeah, it was amazing. It was meeting somebody that was on the same wavelength, I guess. So yeah.
And where are you living? So where Patrick in the past has traveled most of the year, correct? Like, I know he had an apartment and has an address, but he's away
a PO box. Yeah. Yeah. He has been on the road full time for something like 8 years. It's crazy. And prior to that, he had, you know, I think a training facility in Ohio and Pennsylvania, before he was on the road full time. But yeah, he's a busy guy. He's on the road like 350 days a year. He's clinicking, teaching almost every single day. If he's not, teaching, he's driving. So there's no downtime. It's an intense schedule, and he loves it. He handles it really, really well. Right now we just moved. So I'm from Wisconsin originally, and, we just moved to Virginia, and Virginia is a little bit more central, as far as his traveling. So, Wisconsin, we're kind of tucked way up in the corner there. But yeah, this is just a little more central to his routes and some of that stuff. So, and it's beautiful here, warmer winters. So,
right. And so you have a little ranch or a big ranch?
So we are on a facility at the moment, which is beautiful. We absolutely love it. Main Gate Equestrian Center. And we're living on site here. And it's kind of an event center. It has four arenas and, you know, just lots of a number of barns and different stalling for, you know, shows and different things like that. So for us, it's a perfect facility because it really helps accommodate training horses and then also clinics and people wanting to haul in for weeks at a time and things like that. So it's really great that way. So yeah, we're loving it.
And so is his schedule still, he's still on the road, and then you're at home training?
Yeah. So he's still on the road. The plan is for him to transition a little bit and start coming off the road a little bit more to be home a little bit more. But I'm here full time training and teaching and, you know, and at home, that's what I was doing before, was training and teaching full time. So I'm kind of the home base, I guess. But yeah, so in the next year, I think he's going to be trying to be home a little bit more. You know, he'd like to bring in some training horses for himself again, have a horse for himself again. And just, you know, he loves the road. He's not burnt out by it, but it's better to be off before you do, I guess. So yeah, so that's our plan at the moment.
And have you gotten back into the competing, or are you?
I have aspirations to, but I'm still, I don't know. I still struggle. I'm getting better about, I struggle going to competitions personally. After learning everything that I've been learning through horsemanship all these years now, I have a hard time stomaching the warm-up arena, you know, and just there's just things that I'm just like, you know, why? You know, I personally really enjoy going to clinics. I like to be the student. I like to help others. I like the education. I like putting my money there. And it's not that I wouldn't compete, and it's not that I won't compete. It's just definitely not a priority. I think it's a nice test. I like to be able to go out to just do it, but I by no means hold that to any sort of standard, for myself or for the horses. Yeah, there's just a lot of things there that I just don't align sometimes with me. So yeah, my focus is education and just being a better rider, trainer, teacher, student, all of those things. So.
And what role, if any, do you play in Patrick's? I mean, have you blended the business together, or are you still kind of separate, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we are, we're blended, but we are separate. We're our own people, but we do so much together. We have so many shared students, and it really works beautifully because him and I both, you know, really approach things from the same mindset. We have the same principles. We have the same kind of flow chart, if you will, around things that, you know, when he's giving a clinic or he's got students that he's teaching lessons to, a lot of times they end up coming to me for that kind of consistency and, you know, helping them through the little pieces and the details and the daily or the weekly or the biweekly or whatever. And then for training horses, for, you know, some situations where it's too much for somebody or, you know, they're struggling, the training horses as well. So we're definitely blending that aspect of me, you know, as the home base, and people are able to come to me if they need that kind of help and that kind of consistency. And it's really been just natural because it was just, we were just so aligned right off the bat that it was pretty wild. So as we kind of are here now in Virginia, I think we're going to grow that concept even more, you know, especially as he transitions off the road. So there'll be more of us blending together. So we are still our own people. You know, I still have my own business, my own training, my own clients, but we do blend quite a bit. And I think we're going to be blending a lot more.
And what about support staff, and what does that look like? So who does all the scheduling and taking care of, you know, where's clinics are and where your lessons are? And
yeah, so he largely does. Well, he had a business manager that was doing a lot of that for him all these years. He has since taken that over and is doing a lot of that himself because he's in that transition spot that it's just easier for him. He knows where a lot of these places are. He knows where he's going. But I do help with some of that for sure. And I definitely help with organizing things at home and keeping things moving at home. We're fortunate here with the facility that it's a fully staffed barn. So I'm off chore duty. Whereas at home, I was wearing all the hats. I was doing the chores, training the horses, teaching the lessons, doing the books, you know, doing all that myself. But here, you know, the chore thing is a huge, oh my gosh, that's a huge load off my plate. So it's really great that I can just now focus on the other pieces. And spend more of my time there. But
right. Yeah. How many horses do you keep in training?
Anywhere from about 4 to 5 horses in training, at home since we've moved and going through that transition. We just moved in May. So we've only been here in Virginia a few months. And I'm recovering from some health issues. So I haven't gotten full back in yet, but the plan now is to keep that number even lower, which I'm excited about because it gives me more time to spend with the horses. And so right now we're only taking in, I mean, I'm projecting here into the future, you know, keeping those numbers under 5, I would want to. Yep. And then Patrick might have a couple here and there, but it's just nice for me to be able to keep those numbers smaller because there's no reason to have, you know, I don't need to have that many. So we're just kind of taking in little by little. And then also for me, a lot of what I do is lessons. So that's a full day, you know, you get a couple horses going and then you've got, you know, another half day of lessons and you only have so many hours. So
yeah. 7 days a week.
Yes. Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad you have some help with the chores. We hired somebody in January and it's been a huge, huge, really, like half of my day is now freed up. So it's awesome. Okay. Let me get into some of these other questions. So, what would you say is your biggest strength?
My biggest strength, I feel like I always have a strong desire to find solutions to things and, you know, a better way of doing something, a different way. If there's a problem, you know, I'm, always seeking solutions. That's something that I feel like I have a lot of resiliency and drive for, finding better ways at things. I feel like that might be one of them. I don't know.
Okay.
That's a hard question.
What about Patrick? What do you feel his strengths are? Strength, number one strength, biggest strength.
Well, I think, I mean, there's so many and in different categories even, but I feel like one thing I'm always impressed with him about is his desire. He's always wanting to be a student. You know, he's always seeking out teachers and coaches that are, you know, doing amazing things in the horse world and putting himself in that student position. And he's really great about that. And, you know, and I love being a student as well, but I feel like he really actively is doing that a lot and just being vulnerable in a lot of ways. And so many doors open for him because of that. And it's really amazing to watch. And I think that's definitely one of his strengths, I think.
How do you feel like you complement each other?
So I think it's so interesting because him and I are so similar, which I feel like everybody always says in relationships, opposites attract. And we are like, you know, and like the first time I saw him working in the arena, I was like, oh my gosh, like this guy's doing everything I'm doing. And we've lived such weirdly parallel lives in similar ways. And I think we just accentuate the best parts of each other. And then the parts of us that we struggle with, I feel like we both struggle, but there's an understanding there. And so it's really interesting. It's been a really interesting dynamic. And so I feel like we just kind of, and then with the horses, we really, really, the compatibility there has been phenomenal. You know, with the training and the students and the, you know, just the whole thing. I feel like we just kind of were, and that's weird. I don't have an exact thing for that other than that we're so similar, which I always find so strange how similar we are. And that could be a problem, you know, but, it really seems to accentuate the good things for sure. We're very relatable, I guess, to each other that way.
When he's home, do you guys have any other hobbies like outside of the horses? I know that's maybe a foreign question.
That is a weird, yeah, because it's like, yeah, the horses are just all the time. And even when we have downtime, we're always like going and finding something to play with, you know, and something to do or a tack shop to go to or something. But outside of horses, he loves to cook. So when he comes home, he like goes to the grocery store, he buys all his food, and he's an amazing cook. And he just makes all these meals. So, it's, you know, he's a cook and then I sit there and eat it. We, you know, pre-COVID, you know, we really enjoyed going to restaurants. You know, when I travel with him on the road, you know, I like to kind of see other places. We do really like to go hiking and you know, find trails and different things to go wander around on. But there's not a lot of that time, I guess.
Right. But you guys have just been married. So this, you know, I guess over your relationship, it doesn't have to be since you've been married, but how has both of your horse journeys changed since you've been together?
I feel like I don't think his has changed at all. Mine has changed as far as kind of absorbing into him a little bit more. You know, being able to come here to this facility, that was a huge load off my workload with, you know, having, you know, staff, you know, people not having to do chores and manage my facilities at home. And then I think for him having me here, that's going to be, as far as the home base, that gives him even more ability to be a benefit and have his students really feel like they can continue to progress. So I feel like we've really added some bonuses to each other that way, that I have, you know, he's got more of a support system in me and vice versa. So
That is one of the questions. What is, who are your support system?
Oh, I would say my family is a big support system. I have wonderful clients and a lot of friends and that way, but I never, it feels like you're on all day long when you're teaching and you're doing all that, for me, I have no problem teaching. I have no problem, being extroverted in that way at all. But then I do need that introvert. I need that downtime for myself. So I don't spend a lot of time with friends, cause I'm just always working, all the time. So I would say it's always my family. I'm on the phone with them. I'm on the phone with my mom a lot. So that's kind of my support, I would say.
And is she in Wisconsin?
She is. Yeah.
What is the hardest thing about being married to Patrick with regard to his lifestyle?
You don't get as much time together as you'd like. But that's also a blessing too. But that is, I guess the schedule is, you don't have the weekends, or the evenings. You have that, one time a month that you're looking forward to seeing him, every few weeks kind of thing. And so yeah, that can be hard, I would say, at times.
What's the best thing?
And I think the best thing is having somebody that shares the passion, that you can sit and have these conversations. I love that. I love, being able to, I can talk about things and he knows what I'm talking about, where, if I try to talk about some of that stuff to my mom or somebody else who's not into horses, they don't have a reference point for it. So I love that. I love, that we share that together. Because it is, it really consumes your life, which is fine if you enjoy it, and we do. But the fact that we understand that about each other is great.
Yeah. What's the best thing? What's the most important lesson that you've learned from him?
I love that he constantly reminds me it's okay to be vulnerable, like the student thing, pushing the envelope on as far as reaching out to other people. And some of that I can kind of get in my box and I can quickly hermit that way. So yeah, he's always kind of pushing the envelope as far as the vulnerability in the student. And also that, and he just said this to me the other day, on the grading scale, reminding me that, perfectionism, it's okay to get a B. As a matter of fact, not only is it okay, it's probably, and with the horsemanship thing, of course, right? Don't have the expectations of an A+ right out the bat. But I hold myself to that a lot of the time, and knowing how, letting some things go, that it's okay to let some things go, that kind of relax with something a little bit more. Don't put so much pressure on yourself or, the outcome kind of a thing. That's been really helpful, reminders that way.
What is the most important lesson that you've taught him?
Oh, I don't know. Most important lesson that I've taught him, I would like to think, the self-awareness around mental health and working on yourself is important. And he always has done that, so I can't take a lot of credit for that. But I feel like, with my coaching background and some of that, that's always kind of a forefront of my awareness and something that I talk about a lot. And I feel like that's added some benefit, that way, and some focus in that direction. And so I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what he would say, but that's my take on it, maybe.
Okay. Awesome. What about the dynamic of teaching each other? Do you ever find yourself what is that dynamic like?
Yeah, that's an interesting dynamic. We have a lot of respect for each other. We definitely do. And it's really helpful that, and kind of amazing. I'm always amazed by how still wildly similar we are. And people think a lot of the time, like, oh, you must have spent a lot of time studying with Patrick. And it's like, no, this is all, this is all me. And we're so aligned, and it's been great. And yet we have learned a lot from each other. But There is a mutual respect there. And he's really good at not, if I don't ask for something, he's not going to say anything, you know, and I appreciate that a lot. Sometimes it kind of frustrates me because I will ask, you know, like, hey, can you watch this while I'm blah, blah, blah. You know, having those eyes on the ground is always really, really helpful. And, you know, sometimes I get frustrated for, you know, I need more feedback. And I think he's kind of like, yeah, no, I know it's going to happen if I give you feedback. So, we, for the most part, do really well with that, but, yeah, it can be, you know, I think just knowing the respect of, you know, I'm my own person, whether you're here or not, kind of thing, and vice versa. And the dynamic is okay. Other than, you know, sometimes I want him to treat me more like a student, and he kind of will refrain a little bit. And sometimes I might treat him a little more like a student than he likes. So I'm the one guilty of unsolicited advice, probably. So.
All right. I've scrolled through and we've gone through a lot of this without really just asking the questions. So let me get to the questions that Patrick answered from Warwick's list and we'll get yours. So he answered, what book do you recommend the most? Not necessarily your favorite book to read, but one you feel everyone needs to read. And he mentioned The Alchemist. And I think he said that you turned him on to that. But he said the one that he gives away to everybody, and he even gave us one, is called MODOK. So what would The Alchemist be yours, or?
Oh, I love The Alchemist. I mean, that is definitely a favorite. And it's, you know, in MODOK too, you know, they're kind of the story form of, you know, they take you through the story, I guess, of a journey of connection to the self, maybe. And it's open to a lot of interpretation, but it's just, they're amazing stories. But for me, my life-changing book, I feel like my life has two parts to it, like before this book and after this book. And this was at the beginning of, you know, kind of starting to learn some of this, you know, through the coaching stuff that I was learning back in 2011, was the book that really turned the corner for me, or was really eye-opening, was Byron Katie, Loving What Is. And it's not maybe the book for, you know, if you're just starting out, but it's absolutely life-changing. And, you know, the premise of it is based off of our thoughts and, you know, the idea that we are not our thoughts and how to question negative, stressful thoughts. And it's just, Eckhart Tolle, you know, describes it as like a sharp sword to the ego. Like the ego will not survive through this journey. And it is incredibly transformative and, you know, really revealing the illusions that we create, the projections that we create through, you know, our everyday life, the things we look at, but in specifically the things that upset us and stress us, you know, stress us out or trigger us. And some of that, it's, that book changed my life in so many ways. It's really unbelievable.
So, Byron Katie, Loving What Is.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to order that right now on Audible.
Awesome.
Sounds like I'm ready for that and in need of that. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's, I hope awesome. You enjoy it.
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
He answered, what was your biggest failure and how has it helped you? And his response was more that he looks at failure as feedback.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But do you have a biggest failure and how it helped you? And define failure however you like, you know.
Right. Right. The biggest failure for me, it was, you know, it's the biggest blessing. You know, the moment when, you know, like the accident where I was, you know, where my life felt like at the time it had completely fell apart in every way possible. You know, losing the one that you love and then seemingly losing my entire life dream at the same time, ended up being the path that put me on ended up being such a blessing and such a gift in a very painful way. But what felt at the time like I had lost everything or I had failed at, you know, achieving my goals, was it was a redirect into a path that I could have never, ever dreamed. So I don't know if that counts as a failure, but it's and that for me, I feel like I can also think of 100 million other ones too, but it's always like that letdown, that where you didn't achieve or you didn't, you know, something disappointed you, whatever. And what is the gift there? And you're not always ready to look at that in the moment, you know, but at some point there, it seems to be a pattern that it ends up being, yeah, being that way. So
great, great answer. What is the most worthwhile thing that you have put your time into? Something that you've done that changed the course of your life? And for Patrick, he said, discovering a little more about myself and digging into the anatomy and psychology of the horses.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the journey of the self was huge, because that also led me on the path of the journey of the horse at the same time, and being in touch with my own emotions, but also their emotions and the nervous system. And I mean, that is just like the endless pit of learning and self-growth. And so I would say that would be my, you know, biggest area of transformation is putting my focus into those areas and really have reaped the rewards from a lot of that. So
great. What have you changed in the last 5 years that has helped shape who you have become? And Patrick's response was understanding of the aids, or our understanding of the application of aids.
I would say in the last 5 years, for me personally, it's really been, again, you know, the self-work, a lot of that, but for me, the learning the modalities that work with the nervous system, for the horses and for myself, that was a game changer. You know, outside of technique, outside of, it really gets you in touch with, I mean, yes, you want to know the psychology, and that's huge also. But it helps you feel it. It helps you feel those thresholds on a level that I couldn't see it maybe as through an observational, you know, waiting for the sign or something like that, or waiting for the trigger, or waiting for the, there was a subtlety in the energy of it that I could feel through the nervous system that just, wow, it just brought that to a whole nother, all those concepts to a whole nother level for me in the last 5 years, I would say.
Where did you, for the nervous system piece of the human, what did you study? Who did you study?
So that was, a lot of that stuff was brought to my awareness through the coaching program and the woman that I had met in 2011 and a guy named Dr. David Berselli. He kind of discovered, the body's natural ability to release trauma and tension through the body, but through the nervous system. Neurogenic tremoring is what he calls it, TRE. And they use And they use it with, I think they, you know, use it now with like army vets and different things and first responders. And it kind of looks weird because the body actually will tremor organically, without you having to do anything. Once you activate it, it kind of knows what to do. And going through that process and learning how to do that and letting my, opening up those channels in my body, wow, that was, it, well, it, my panic attacks that I was having with the PTSD completely stopped in a matter of months. And that was, so being able to actually experience it. And when I watch the horses now, when I'm doing work with them, I know exactly what that feels like, and I can feel their nervous system through my own nervous system. So my nervous system became really aware. You know, I became to feel nervous systems through my nervous system in a way that I couldn't prior on the, you know, because I had gone through the TRE and the neurogenic tremoring process. So yeah, it's just made it all very relatable. It's like, wow, that same thing happens to us too. So,
and is that a practice that you still do, like daily, weekly, monthly?
The TRE, that becomes more of like a maintenance. Like he kind of, Dr. David Porcelli kind of calls it, you know, taking out the garbage. It just, you know, we carry around a lot of baggage throughout our lives when we suppress, you know, and we don't try, you know, unknowingly to most of us that we suppress this. And it ends up being the equivalent of not taking the garbage out for 25 years or 35 years or whatever. You have all this stuff stored in your body that the nervous system remembers, you know, it catalogs it. So the first, you know, as you start the process, there's kind of a lot of that cleaning things out, the body letting go of a lot of stuff. So it took me a matter of months of, I was tremoring every day for, you know, an hour or two a day, which is a lot, but I needed a lot. but for most people, what he recommends is, you know, 3 times a week. If you do 15 minutes, 3 times a week, it's enough to make neurogenic changes in your brain. And, you know, helping to recalibrate that. So just, yeah. And then you can do more on top of that if you wanted to. And so at now I can feel it before I need it. You know, my body's already kind of discharging it, before I need to go into like a tremor session. So it's very maintenance. It's just like picking up the counter after you eat lunch. You know, it's very, very, very subtle. So,
Dr. David Porcelli. Okay, awesome. I'm getting a lot out of this. So what do you do to relieve stress or recharge your batteries? We'll start there.
Relieve, I would say, like for me, I really, if I can get like on a trail somewhere, on a hiking trail, I love exercise that way. It's a great way for me to diffuse stress. Going for a run just, or going for a hike, getting out into nature, kind of getting away from everything, whatever the routine is, the barn, the horse, you know, just kind of, you know, if I can get to a lake, that's even better. I would say that's kind of my recharge, is just getting moving, outside of the moving that I do with the horses, but just for myself, I guess.
Yep. And then the second part of the question is, where do you find the motivation or inspiration for what you do?
It all just parallels so much. You know, anything that I do on myself, I immediately start seeing it in the horses and vice versa. And it's just this, it's just so intertwined. And the passion there is, you know, so much for my own healing, but the reward that I get that is just, I love the most, I would say, is being able to see the changes in the horses, you know, feeling that as much as they give to me and the teachings that they give to me, you know, if I can provide to them more comfort, more empathy, more connection that they probably have not experienced, you know, prior to me, unfortunately, a lot of these horses, you know, they might have gone through more of a traditional program where, you know, it just, you know, shut them down, walled them up. And watching, I always think of it like a flower blossoming, you know, as they kind of, as the layers of tension, defensiveness, you know, emotion, whatever, dissolve, and the horse starts to seek you, and the expression in their faces, especially their eyes, when their eyes start to get bright like that, and you can just see, it's like the light switch in their minds goes, hey, you can hear me, you understand me, and they start seeking you and communicating with you through the things that they do, you know, that it's so rewarding. I feel like that they have somebody on their side, and not to say at all that I know everything about it, but I see that change all the time with the horses, and that for me is so rewarding because I know that they're feeling better because of that. And like, that's, there's nothing better for me than that. And so, yeah, that gives me a lot of passion.
I can tell by your face.
Yeah.
It looks, okay. Well, that brings us to the ends of the questions. If people wanted to get in touch with Lisa King, how do they do that? How do they find you?
I have a Facebook page, Lisa King Equine. And you can message me through there. You can email me, lisakingequine@gmail.com. You can get a hold of Patrick at Patrick King Horsemanship. He's on Facebook, Instagram, all the things. So yeah, you can get a hold of us pretty easily through most of those avenues.
Great. Well, it was wonderful getting to know you, and I'm sure all of our listeners will be appreciative of it as well. And the conversation was great. I've got notes all written down here. I'm going to go order books and look up people. And so thank you very much for your time. Well, we really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It was very fun.
Great. All right. We'll see you next time on the Journey On podcast.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Journey On podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick has over 650 full-length training videos on his online video library at videos.warwickschiller.com. Be sure to follow Warwick on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram to see his latest training advice and insights.